This message comes from Wall Street Journal sponsor C3 AI. C3 Generative AI equips enterprises with verified, traceable answers. It's secure, hallucination-free, LLM agnostic, and IP liability-free. Learn more at c3.ai. This is Enterprise AI.
Top gymnasts deliver powerful testimony before lawmakers on the FBI's handling of sexual abuse claims against former women's national team doctor Larry Nassar. Plus, the challenges the Biden administration is facing over workplace vaccine mandates.
Well, there's some businesses who say that they don't believe it is the role of the federal government to determine whether or not employees should be vaccinated.
And emotional support for your pets. It's Wednesday, September 15th. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. This is the PM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories that moved the world today. Four of the world's top gymnasts gave scathing testimony before the Senate Judiciary Committee today, excoriating the failures of an FBI investigation into sexual abuse by former women's national team physician Larry Nassar. Nassar was accused of abusing hundreds of women and girls over decades and is currently serving an effective life term in prison after pleading guilty to 7 counts. Elite gymnasts Michaela Maroney, Allie Reisman, Simone Biles, and Maggie Nichols were identified by federal officials as potential victims in 2015. But a Justice Department Inspector General report released back in July acknowledged that FBI field agents disregarded the gymnasts and later made false statements to cover their mistakes. Today, the four athletes gave emotional accounts of how the FBI's failure to act left a lasting impact.
What is the point of reporting abuse if our own FBI agents are going to take it upon themselves to bury that report in a drawer? They had legal, legitimate evidence of child abuse and did nothing.
Over the past few years, it has become painfully clear how a survivor's healing is affected by the handling of their abuse. And it disgusts me that we are still fighting for the most basic answers and accountability over 6 years later.
As the lone competitor in the recent Tokyo Games who was a survivor of this horror, I can assure you that the impacts of this man's abuse are not ever over or forgotten.
For many hundreds of survivors of Larry Nassar, this hearing is one of our last opportunities to get justice. We ask that you do what is in your power to ensure those that engaged in wrongdoing are held accountable under the law.
Reporter Luis Radnofsky was at the hearing.
There were a lot of questions in the Senate hearing about why the agents from the Indianapolis field office had not been criminally charged. And FBI Director Christopher Wray referred those questions to the Justice Department, who he said had declined to prosecute. And the Justice Department did not send the Attorney General or the Deputy Attorney General or another figure to the hearing. More broadly, Director Wray said that he wanted what had happened to become a kind of training exercise for FBI agents and something that they studied very closely as part of the Bureau's attempt to make sure that it never happened again. He apologized. The victims and the senators discussed a number of different ways they would like to see anti-abuse measures in sports overhauled. That was a smaller focus of this particular hearing, but it's certainly a matter of ongoing interest.
Today's hearing comes as insurers of USA Gymnastics and the U.S. Olympics and Paralympic Committee are weighing a proposed $425 million settlement between the organizations and hundreds of Nassar's victims. Some of the gymnast lawyers also called for separate action against the FBI. The Biden administration has been pushing for COVID-19 vaccine boosters to combat the Delta variant, but a Food and Drug Administration report could put the brakes on the plan. In a report released today, the FDA said that current vaccine doses provide adequate protection from severe illness and death. At the end of the week, an outside panel of scientific advisors will analyze the report and make a recommendation on whether to authorize boosters for the general population. In 2018, Facebook changed its algorithm to boost meaningful social interactions with friends and family, known as MSIs, and make the site a healthier place. But according to a Wall Street Journal investigation, company documents show the opposite happened. Content on the platform became more divisive. The investigation also shows that CEO Mark Zuckerberg was aware of that, but resisted proposed fixes. Reporter Keech Hagee has more on Zuckerberg's response.
From the documents, we could see that he was definitely reluctant to make any big changes. He was willing to do a little bit of testing. He was willing to roll out some changes in what they called at-risk countries like Ethiopia and Myanmar, but was really reluctant to make changes that would hurt MSI, which was the all-important measure of engagement and sort of what they were organizing the company around this time. We have spoken to several Facebook executives about it. And their main points are any algorithm is going to have its problems. Any algorithm is going to risk giving some folks who want to game it, a leg up. And that's why we have an integrity team. And the integrity team is, in fact, the group that made a lot of these reports that we saw that were flagging the problems. So that's one thing. And their broader point really is, look, we didn't create divisiveness in society. It was there before Facebook. You cannot say that we are responsible for the full state of our divided discourse today.
We have more from Keech on Facebook's algorithm, part 3 of the Facebook files on WSJ.com and in our sister podcast, Tech News Briefing. Coming up, how businesses are responding to efforts to mandate workplace vaccines.
This message comes from Wall Street Journal sponsor C3 AI. Insights. You need them to solve business problems, but buried in volumes of disparate data, they're seemingly invisible. C3 Generative AI enables business leaders to instantly access secure, hallucination-free, verifiable insights from a unified knowledge source, all with a natural language search. Turn the invisible into the obvious with C3 Generative AI. Learn more at c3.ai.
President Biden met with CEOs from Disney, Microsoft, Walgreens, and other companies at the White House to discuss the COVID-19 mandates his administration plans to put into effect for companies with 100 employees or more.
And I look forward to working together to beat this pandemic and keep our economy growing and growing strong.
Many companies already have their own plans in place, but Biden's announcement last week has been met with mixed reactions from the business community. And the plan is also facing legal challenges from Republican governors. Joining me now with more on sentiment around the mandates is Wall Street Journal White House reporter Sabrina Siddiqui. Hi, Sabrina. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
So, Sabrina, despite criticism of this mandate, President Biden has been strongly defending it. So let's start with businesses who are on board. What have you been hearing from the CEOs of those companies about why they're choosing to go along with the president's plan?
Well, it's interesting because I spoke with the CEO of Columbia Sportswear, Tim Boyle, and he said that the company had actually been debating internally whether or not to have more strict vaccination requirements. They had just been encouraging employees to get vaccinated, but didn't make it a mandate or requirement of any kind. And he said that part of the concern about requirements was that employees who did not want to get vaccinated might just go seek employment elsewhere. And so what the Columbia Sportswear CEO, Tim Boyle, said was now that the president is creating a standard across all businesses with more than 100 employees, it kind of levels the playing field. And so employees will know that this is actually going to be a requirement across the board and not just at their place of work.
Sabrina, what about businesses who are opposing this? We know there are many factors that CEOs are weighing right now. What have you heard from businesses who are not in favor of these mandates?
Well, there are some businesses who say that they don't believe it is the role of the federal government to determine whether or not employees should be vaccinated. There are others who are worried about what the specifics might look like when it comes to exemptions. The administration has signaled that there will be perhaps some exemptions on a medical basis, perhaps on religious grounds, but it can be a bit of a slippery slope in dictating what that might look like. And I think that some of that really depends on how they draft the rule that will ultimately give us more of a sense of how this will be implemented. So some businesses are really just in a wait and see mode. I know the Chamber of Commerce, which obviously represents a lot of businesses across the country, they say that they're actually just waiting for this rule because they want to better understand how these businesses will have to implement it, what kind of exemptions will be in place.
And we know this issue has also divided labor unions. Sabrina, are we seeing a split among certain industries or sectors of the economy as far as which are opposed and which are in favor?
Well, I think it's more so that labor unions have had a mixed reaction, more so in terms of how this announcement was made. So, you know, the nation's largest labor organization, the AFL-CIO, has actually supported the president's vaccination requirements. But, you know, another group, the American Federation of Government Employees, said that vaccination requirements should be negotiated with unions. So I think it's more of a concern you're seeing from some labor groups that unions, bargaining units, have not necessarily been part of this conversation. And one example is Tyson Foods, a company, large company, that did in fact put in place vaccination requirements. They actually struck a deal with their labor union when they had come up with what the scope of those vaccination requirements would look like. So I think for labor unions, it's more that you're hearing that some would have rather had a seat at the table, not necessarily that they oppose the requirements, but perhaps want more input in this process.
We're now seeing vaccine mandates in schools, universities, certain hospital groups. Where is public sentiment right now on vaccine mandates?
It's interesting because this is obviously also a big political fight, right? You have a number of Republican governors who out the gate have criticized the vaccination requirements as government overreach and are kind of leaning into this political battle once again about COVID requirements and where they might go too far. But actually, there are some recent polls showing that a majority of Americans do support some type of vaccination requirements, and specifically where you see that support, according to at least two new or more recent surveys, is vaccination requirements in order to return to the workplace. You know, 59% of remote workers, according to an Associated Press poll, said they favor vaccination requirements in their own workplace. And then there are also some surveys showing that a majority of Americans support vaccination requirements for students who are returning to class in person. So that's another piece of this puzzle that I think the White House is trying to emphasize. It's not just the business sector, it's hospital groups, it's all of these different pillars that really represent, I think, the country kind of going back to normal, who really need to see vaccination rates tick up in order for there to finally be some kind of light at the end of the tunnel here.
Wall Street Journal White House reporter Sabrina Siddiqui. Sabrina, thanks so much for joining me today.
Thank you.
And finally, it's been a very stressful year and a half for teens and young adults. Studies have shown that having a pet can boost mental health. So you might see more emotional support animals on college campuses this fall. Students say the animals help them alleviate their anxiety. They include dogs and cats, as well as more exotic creatures like hedgehogs and chinchillas. Our higher education reporter Doug Belkin says that in some cases, one is not enough, and the emotional support pets are getting their own emotional support pets.
One of the women we spoke to bought a ferret last year and very much enjoyed his company, and then began to worry when she went out to class during the day that she would leave the ferret alone in her dorm room and the ferret itself would become lonely and anxious. So her answer was to buy a second ferret to keep the first ferret company.
And that's what's news for this Wednesday afternoon. We'll be back tomorrow morning. If you like our show, please rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Anne Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal.
This message comes from Wall Street Journal sponsor C3 AI. C3 Generative AI equips enterprises with verified, traceable answers. It's secure, hallucination-free, LLM agnostic, and IP liability-free. Learn more at c3.ai. This is Enterprise AI.